In today's episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast, how to get strong as a bull and then get ripped, how to get better results from cold thermogenesis, what to do about excessive sweating, how often should you poop, the best natural skincare strategies, and how to get rid of a bone spur without surgery.
Welcome to the BenGreenfieldFitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
I'm going to interrupt Brock before he even has a chance to say anything at all, because he usually is the first person to talk in these episodes.
I do. I usually blurt something out.
But I got to tell you, just to give you a little insider sneak peek of what goes on before we record, I so far have been filled in that Brock took a giant dump this morning. He has he has almond skin in his teeth, and he's drinking decaf coffee right now.
Yeah.
So just to paint a picture for you guys.
That was nice that you aired my shame for me.
Yes, no problem. Anytime, my friend, anytime. Awkward silence in the
Is
podcast.
That the,
I guess that was our awkward silence moment. Speaking of awkward silence, I'm about...
There's going to be a serious awkward silence when Ben goes up into the wilderness to practice his zombie apocalypse skills.
That's right. I'm
you
going.
Leave tomorrow, right?
I'm going total AWOL. So for all of you podcast listeners and folks who ask me questions online and stuff, you may notice some amount of absence on my part, especially from responding to personal emails, because I'm going to a 5-day wilderness survival camp in the backwoods of Colorado somewhere with no phone and no internet, and I'll come back out with squirrels growing out of my beard. I guess squirrels would be more appropriately living in my beard, not growing out of my beard.
I like Unless the image of them growing out of your beard, though. It just seems more like just sort of, I can see their little arms pushing their faces out of your beard.
Giving my face, squirming. Giving birth to squirrels. So exactly. There's another intense visual for our listeners. And we have a jam-packed podcast this week because we're going to just be doing a special episode next week, considering the fact that I can't record too well when I'm living in a bear cave or wherever I'll be. So...
The squirrels will bat at your microphone too much.
We'll be sure to give you a special report, though, if I decide I want to return to post-industrial America after I spend a few days in the trees.
Yeah, what if you never come back?
Could happen. Could happen.
Yeah, it could. I guess I'll take over.
Yep, you can
look out, everybody. Bad advice coming out everywhere.
Have my kids. You can have my wife. You can have my dog, and I will. I'll be out in the cabin in the woods somewhere. So there you go.
News flashes.
All right, go over to audiblepodcast.com/Ben. audiblepodcast.com/Ben, and you can sign up for your free Audible membership and get yourself a free book. And I know, Ben, you talked about this book over at Daily Apple.
Yeah, you? I did. I recently wrote a blog post over at marksdailyapple.com, which is
marksdailyapple.com.
A really good website. Mark's cool.
Patent pending.
It's called Top 10 Rules for Becoming an Ancestral Athlete. And in that article, I talk about this book called Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb, who I actually...
Anti-Fragile. So that's strong, not... Fragile. It's an interesting way to phrase it.
It's the subtitle is Things That Gain from Disorder, and it's pretty cool. It just teaches you about how things like air conditioning and heat and modern living and health and biology and medicine and all of this stuff is basically making us weak, and how to make yourself strong. Audiblepodcast.com/Ben describes it as erudite and witty. And what does erudite mean again?
I think that word basically sums up making us weak.
Wait, erudite does? Really?
Well, not really. Erudite is somebody who's well read, well learned, very clever, and
yes. Well, erudite and witty. I'm not going even to pretend that I came up with that phrase. Talib's message is revolutionary. That's what Audible says about it. So, either way. Cool. Good listen for you. Check it out. It'll be a good book that will just blow your mind. And speaking of blowing your mind, an article came out, I think it was on the New York Times websites, although I also saw it on...
Hey, wait a second. Are we doing this in the wrong order? Did I jump into special announcements when I should have gone into news flashes?
You did, but you make mistakes. Man. We all make mistakes.
Yeah. You know, okay. I'm glad now that you told everybody that I was drinking decaf coffee, because that explains... what's going on in my brain.
And I love how in today's podcast we're doing zero editing. We're just kind of like talking over all our mistakes, so maybe we'll just do that the whole time.
Sometimes we realize we're doing something wrong and we'll actually go back, but I don't think this week.
Nah,
this isn't one of those weeks.
Not gonna happen. I actually have to go to the doctor right after this podcast for a special heart scan.
Your stress test.
Yeah, I'm gonna go see what 10 years of extreme endurance exercise has done to my heart. So stay tuned for some feedback on that. But anyways, that means that we have to churn out this podcast in time for me to hop in my truck and drive to the doctor's office.
Okay, so let's go back to news flashes then and continue on as if I didn't put us into special announcements.
Meanwhile, chopping wood boosts your testosterone more than playing sports. And this was pretty cool study. A guy named Dr. Ben Trumbull studied a bunch of forager/farmers in the Bolivian Amazon. I'm not really sure exactly what a forager farmer is, but I can only imagine. And they tested
their... I'm sure he has squirrels growing out of his beard.
He must. They tested these guys' saliva after they played soccer, and then after they had chopped down trees while clearing the jungle to grow crops. And at that point, I kind of realized while reading why they chose this group, because how many people on the face of the planet both know how to play soccer...
Do both of those things.
...and chop down trees to clear jungle to grow crops.
Exactly.
Hence Bolivia. So what they found was that there was a significantly higher release of or concentration of salivary testosterone after chopping the wood, specifically doing something that would kind of be considered providing for the family or something engaged in food or economic productivity versus simply playing sports. Both result in a spike in performance, but the spike in or the spike from chopping wood is higher. So,
they didn't mention was that they were playing soccer against 10-year-old girls.
That's right. This actually inspired my workout last night, though, and it's why I'm sore right now. I have one of those battle maces from Onnit, which is designed to really give you a really good workout that's similar to what you get from like a kettlebell workout. But one of the exercises you can do with the giant battle mace is wood chopping against a giant rubber tire. And so I swing the battle mace up over my head while my 5-year-old boys stand there watching me and cheering me on, and I hit the big rubber tire as many times as I can. And that is a really, really good workout, I gotta tell you. If you're just gonna go out and do one thing, and it's a little bit cathartic too. So
I bet. So do you switch sides, like one side, one chop on the left, one chop on the right, just back and forth?
I go 5 and 5 just to kind of spread the workout through my body evenly. And this is also why, and I'm actually in the process of building a home right now that's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, on 10 acres out
more so
in Washington, more hippie action from Ben. And I'm putting a wood stove into that home. And when I was at the Paleo FX conference last year, I listened into a really interesting discussion by a biohacker named Josh Whiten, who actually lives as ancestrally as possible, I think somewhere in like Brooklyn or somewhere in New York city-ish.
Seems difficult. And
he's a huge fan of these modern traditional these modern wood stoves where air enters the burning chamber from multiple conduits that are kind of built through throughout the stove. And they have these panels that reflect heat back at the wood and into the room. They've got these tight fitting doors that keep particulates out of the air. And you can put this intake into them that uses air that's piped in from the outdoors into a combustion chamber. So I at first didn't want to put a wood stove in my home because they're really inefficient. And then once I listened to him talk and started to research this a little bit more, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes for everybody listening in who's interested in this stuff, it turns out that wood-burning stoves, like modern wood-burning stoves, can actually be really green and really efficient. Plus, you get higher testosterone, so what's not to love?
Yeah, well, I guess if they can keep the soot out of the room, that's awesome, because like my biggest problem with wood-burning stuff is the smell and the dirt.
I actually want soot and dirt all over my living room so that after I've chopped wood, I can go in with my jacked up testosterone levels and just like roll around on the bear skins in my living room, making love to my wife with my huge testosterone levels and then stroking my beard and sitting in front of the fire as it crackles away. So
you're totally not coming back from this wilderness retreat. I'm gonna be stuck with everything. Jeez.
Let's move along.
All right,
so let's move on and talk about high heels.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
I'll put a link to this in the show notes. What is this, episode 255?
255.
So in the show notes to episode number 255, I'm going to put a link to this really disturbing 3D scan of a female foot in high heels. And they have this new way to use a $340,000 scanner at an orthopedic hospital to do a 360-degree scan of somebody's foot in about 60 seconds. And so they're studying high heels now. And when you do the full scan with the high heels, it's really nasty what goes on with the foot. So the toes get squashed inside the shoe. And the more stiletto-shaped that the high heel is, the worse that is. So the toes get squashed, and then they become clawed. And the base of the big toe kind of becomes deviated outwards, which forms this bunion. And then the bones actually become rotated and drop out of position. And so you're not only looking at creating some serious foot problems when you wear high heels, especially if you're wearing them, you know, for like 8 hours a day, but it's also, it creates a lot of upstream issues in your low back. It kind of turns off your ability to use your glutes. It's just, it's bad news all around. And for any of you women who need more convincing that you should save high heels for situations in which you're preferably not putting much weight on your feet at all, and you're only going to have them on for a short period of time, go check out this scan. It's pretty nutso. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And I'm sure Brock at this point has taken off his high heels.
I did. I threw them out the window when we first started talking about this.
Moved on to skates or something.
Yeah, well, I'm always in hockey skates, really. It was just my high heel skates that I was wearing before.
Gotcha. Well, one more article I'll link to that I put out on Twitter that I wanted to explain a little bit more. And this was a study that they did in mice, where they had these mice exercise for 90 minutes in a fasted state. And I've written articles before about how cellular death can be initiated when you exercise in a fasted state. And I think a lot of people get a sharp intake of breath and think that that's a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. It's called autophagy or cellular turnover or
autophagy,
as they say in Canada, or as they say anywhere other than Ben Greenfield's head.
I believe you pronounced it autophagy once, which was, that was uncomfortable.
Slightly on PC. Or cellular apoptosis. Anyways, we're talking about cell death. And when you actually allow your cells to turn over a little bit more quickly, you clean up the trash in your body, so to speak. You remove a lot of cellular garbage. And so that's one of the benefits. It's why exercise in a fasted state can be potentially longevity enhancing, or I don't even know if that's a word. Is longevity enhancing a word?
Why not? Well, it's not one word. It's two.
We made it up. So yeah. it increases longevity and also improves the actual muscular response to the workout. You also get what's called increased mitochondrial fission, which means that you can improve your mitochondrial density or your ability to potentially use things like fatty acids to make ATP-based energy more quickly when you are actually exercising in that fasted state. A lot of people hear about this, though, and then they go out and they're idiots. And I'm sorry, but when you look at the study, the mice were doing the equivalent of what basically comes out to a brisk walk in humans for 90 minutes. And people see this research, and then they go out and they head out to their CrossFit box, or they grab their hardcore master's swim workout for that morning or whatever, and they go do this stuff. Yeah, and then you do that day after day, and it sends a message to your body that you are asking it to dip deep into its energy stores in basically a catabolic state. And you get muscle wasting, and you get a huge amount of cortisol formed, and you get a drop in your testosterone. You get a lot of nasty downstream metabolic issues. So when we're talking about exercise in a fasted state, like when I'm sitting down and writing down a fat loss workout for somebody, for example, I actually do, in both males and females, kind of use that fasted workout approach, but it's always easy stuff. Like it's 20 to 30 minutes of easy aerobics, and I don't even flirt with that 90 minute range more often than about once a week as far as like a long fasted workout. And it's always aerobic and always easy so that there's not too much muscle deconstruction that's going on.
And we're talking about a real fasted state too, not just haven't eaten for a couple hours, but actually ate dinner rather early, didn't eat anything again until after the workout the next morning kind of thing, right?
In the case of the mice, it was 8 hours. So, yeah. And I don't...
Well, but I guess mice have tiny little stomachs and tiny
that's
little
what I was
storage
thinking.
Glycogens.
You know, perhaps that's the equivalent of 16 hours in humans. Who knows? But either way, some cool stuff about fasted workouts, about chopping wood to boost your testosterone levels, and...
mice on treadmills.
And high heels. So there you go. Go chop wood and don't do it in high heels, and be careful doing it fasted, and you will have benefited from every newsflash in today's episode.
Special announcements.
I'm not going to say anything about Audible because I already did.
That's
so
right.
All I'll remind you to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/Ben, and that is
That's
all
right.
I'm going to say about
they
that.
They got their freaking time to shine. So I am headed to London after the wilderness trip. I'll turn around and fly to London to speak at the Global Triathlon Conference. And
that's jolly old, isn't it?
Jolly
not,
old.
Not London, Ontario, or...
Jolly, or Arkansas, as we mentioned earlier. There's a Facebook page, though, because I am going to do a meetup in London while I am there for all the Ben Greenfield Fitness listeners. And we'll put a link in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/255. We're going to do a day of playing in the park, followed by a nice, healthy, primal, paleo, whatever you want to call it, style dinner put on by a guy named Daryl Edwards, who runs these fantastic primal workshops around the world. And he is the guy who also creates workouts at thefitnessexplorer.com, which is a fantastic website. It's a ton of fun. He's offering this special early bird discount. At the time of this podcast recording, the early bird discount is good for another about 48 hours or so for you to squeeze into that primal workshop. We're basically, it's fun. We climb trees. We crawl around like animals. We do some parkour, move gnat style, play basically.
And you evade just a bunch of bobbies that are chasing you through Hyde Park.
Evade those bobbies. That's right. So if you want to
learn. Luckily, they only have nightsticks. So
that's right.
You don't have to worry about getting shot.
Yeah. So no permanent risk of death or anything like that. Not that there is any temporary form of death. Anyways, bobby evading. So if you want to enhance your bobby evading skills, check out the link in the show notes and come out to that. And then just a couple of other things. Everybody's asking about Ironman Canada and what went on with ketosis and my race report and everything. Published that on Monday, a couple of days ago. anyone who is part of our $10 a year premium podcast at bengreenfieldfitness.com/premium can grab that and run away with it all. The blood lab results, the nitty-gritties of what happened with the nutrition, everything that shook up as far as whether or not ketosis actually worked, whether I plan on continuing that scenario for Ironman Hawaii, pretty much everything you'd ever want to know. I geeked out for about an hour. And before Ironman Hawaii, for any of you who are part of the premium podcast, I will be doing it again. Essentially kind of filling you in on all the little things that are getting added into the protocol and just some of the big takeaways for you, whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're wanting to experiment with, you know, ketogenesis or blood work or biohacking or minimalist training protocols or any of that jazz. All of that's over at the premium. So,
and head over to YouTube and do a search for Ben Greenfield Fitness, and you'll see there's a couple of videos that make great compendiums to that podcast episode that Ben did too.
That's right. Brock and I went nuts with the video camera because he was up there as well. And
I actually had nothing else to do but chase him around with the video camera.
We did shoot. The next time that you listen to the podcast, stay tuned for a special URL that we're going to give you, because we did actually shoot a cool little 5-minute workout video for you where Brock and I are messing around. So stay tuned for that. And last thing I wanted to throw into the special announcements here just real quick was that we did have one slot open up for Thailand, for the Thailand triathlon adventure that I'm taking everybody on from November 15th to December 4th. Or November 21st through December 4th, depending on when you decide to jump into the adventure. But we'll put a link in the show notes to that. It's going to be a ton of fun. And if you want to escape to Asia this winter and go race and train and do some clinics and stuff like that, definitely get in on that. We have one slot that opened up, so there you go.
At first glance, triathletes appear to be a pretty fit group, at least with clothes on. But it's pretty common for triathletes to have tiny arms, a thin and weak neck, a stick-like midsection, and a body that's just too skinny. But just imagine if your arms were cut and defined, your chest and shoulders were ripped, your waistline was tapered like a V, your stomach was flat and hard, and your legs were sleek and curvaceous. In other words, what if you had the ultimate triathlon body? Now you can. Learn how to swim, bike, and run fast, and look incredibly sexy doing it. Go to TryRipped.com to start today. That's TryRipped.com. Listener Q&A.
Hey, Ben, I was wondering if you were familiar with the Stronglist 5x5 program. I know the 5x5s have been around for a long time, but just for somebody who's wanting to strengthen up and bulk up a little bit, is it a good program, and is it effective? I appreciate the work you do and look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
Now, I've never heard of Stronglift 555. I'm hoping that you have, Ben.
555 is actually something that's been around since the 70s, to tell you the truth.
Maybe that's why I don't know about it.
So, quick overview here for people who are wondering about 5x5. So, if you want to get strong and you want to get mass and you just want to make yourself strong like Bull, 5x5 is a good way to go.
Oh, is it 5x5, not 5x5?
Well, this 5x5 workout is based on the original 5x5 training system.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
And that was designed by a football strength coach back in the 70s. It was this guy named Bill Starr. And 5x5 is just 5 sets of 5 repetitions of specific exercises. So the original 5x5 program was published in this book called The Strongest Shall Survive. And it was designed simply to bulk up football players, to add mass and some amount of strength to football players. So the way that the 5x5 workout goes, and this is something that men or women can do who want to get strong fast, and I'll explain in a minute how this is actually very similar to something I'm personally going to be doing in the off season for my training this year. But each workout in the original 5x5 workout has three primary exercises that you do. And the three primary exercises are squats, so a basic barbell squat with the bar on your mm-hmm. back, power cleans, which mm-hmm. is kind of more of an Olympic weightlifting exercise, and then the bench yeah. press, which is actually an exercise that I hate and I think is a silly exercise. Anyways, though, unless you want to add a bunch of mass to your chest, and it's not that bad. Yeah, silly bench press. So these three exercises basically work every major muscle in your body once you actually put all three together. So when you do the 5x5 workout, the original 5x5 workout, what you do is each exercise is rotated so that one of the three exercises is performed with a maximum load each week, while the other exercises are performed with a sub-maximal load. So let's say you were going to do your 5x5 on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and that's pretty typical. You're usually doing something like this 3 days a week and following it for around 6 weeks or so. So Monday, you'd be doing really heavy squats, five sets of five squats, and then medium intensity power cleans and bench presses, but you'd also be doing five sets of five reps of those. And then like Wednesday, squats, you'd use a medium weight, power cleans would be as heavy as you could go, 5x5, and then bench press, you'd do 5x5, but it'd be a little bit less intensity. And then on the last day, like a Friday, the bench press would be the heavy exercise that you do. Now, it works really well for mass. There are a bunch of really cool variations of the 5x5 workout too. And one of the best books that I would point you towards, if you want to see some really cool variations of the 5x5 workout, including a variation of the 5x5 workout called Simple Strength, which is a variation that I'm actually going to be doing in the triathlon off season this year to make myself strong and build mass and kind of get my body to the point where it's ready to start getting, you know, my goal is to put on a lot of muscle, and I need to get strong first. So I'm going to use this book. I believe
the number 30 pounds has been thrown around.
My plan is to put on 30 pounds of muscle the first few months of 2014. Yeah. Anyways, though, the book Interventions by Dan John. It's called Interventions by Dan John. There are some really good variations of the 5x5 protocol in that book. And another very, very good book, if you're not accustomed to throwing around a barbell or you don't really know how to move a barbell right, and you don't necessarily have access to like a weightlifting coach to work with, is the book Starting Strength by Mark Ripito. If you were to read Starting Strength by Mark Ripito and the book Interventions by Dan John, you would have access to all the information up inside your head that you need to get mass and get really strong really fast. I still think that a lot of folks need to get in touch with a personal trainer or a certified weightlifting coach and actually learn how to do specific moves properly if they're really going to seriously make some inroads into strength. Like the power clean, for example, in the original 5x5 workout. If you don't know how to do a power clean and you're trying to do five max reps of or max weighted reps of power clean, you're going to screw yourself up fast. So that's why you need to be careful with this stuff. Now,
yeah, books aren't very good at correcting your form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I kind of got my chops doing a 12-month internship with the University of Idaho football team, where we had two certified weightlifting coaches, and I was in the weight room 3 to 4 hours a day watching them teach and then assisting with the actual instruction for the football team, and then also doing all of that myself. So, you know, I spent a year in the trenches learning this stuff, and that helps a lot to hook up with an expert who knows how to move. And to not just have your head in a book. But as far as some of the variations, some of the workouts, some of the programming, these books are really good. Intervention by Dan John and Starting Strength by Mark Ripito. So this 5x5 program that 555 asks about, they left themselves anonymous, didn't they?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think it was on purpose. It was just so excited to ask the question, I think he forgot to say his name.
So excited. 555 is it's a variation of the 5x5 program. It uses the lifts squat, bench press, and barbell rows on one day of the week, and then it uses the exercises squat, overhead press, and deadlift on the other day of the week. So it does eliminate the power clean, which can be one of the more kind of injury-creating exercises in a traditional 5x5 protocol, but it's pretty much the 5x5, just a variation of it. So my issue with this 555 program, and they've got a website for kind of a typical internet sales website, is it promises to get you ripped and burn off body fat, and that's bull. 5x5 programs don't do that. All they do is give you mass and make you strong. And if you've ever seen a football linebacker with their shirt off, most of them aren't ripped. They're just kind of fat with a lot of muscle, and they're kind of puffy. So this would be something that you would do prior to launching into like a more traditional bodybuilding style program, or launching into a more kind of Metcon style program like a Beachbody Insanity or a CrossFit or a P90X or something along those lines. Or you know, another really good one would be like an MMA style training routine, like Martin Rooney has a good book called The Warrior, I believe it's called The Warrior Workouts, something like that. Yeah. But or Cardio for Warriors, I think. But anyways, you have to follow up a mass program like this. Like let's say you were going to do a 5x5 for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or perhaps 12 weeks would be about as long as you'd go through something like this. You'd want to follow it up with another 6 months or 9 months or even a year of just like specific Metcon or bodybuilding style workouts to get you ripped after you put on the mass. So I'll put a link to the book Interventions by Dan John, the book Starting Strength by Mark Ripito, a link to this Stronglift 5x5 program in the show notes. But then I'm also going to put a link to a 9-month men's muscle building program. And it's one that women could use too. I designed it. I named it Men's Muscle Building Program just because I wanted to appeal to the dudes out there. But if you were a lady and you wanted to kind of get toned or ripped or whatever, you could use a program like this. It would be something that you'd follow up the starting strength or any 5x5 variation with. And if you were to follow that program, it's all programmed into Training Peaks, which is the online training software that I use to deliver workouts to the phone, to the email, whatever. It's all really specific. I spell out the exact exercises, workouts to do. So a really cool scenario would be you pick your 5x5 variation, whether you're going to do this Stronglift 5x5 or Simple Strength or one of the variations in the book Interventions by Dan John, and then you follow it up with something like this 9-month men's muscle building program. And that would be like if you're going to, you know, kind of target 2014 to just turn yourself into a freak of nature during that year. That would be how to do it. That would be what I would do.
Hello, Ben and Barack. I have a question regarding cold thermogenesis. I was hoping you could discuss or contrast the effects and benefits of pure cold exposure, all cold water, for example, versus a hot and cold alternate contrast. I'm inquiring specifically as it pertains to a shower protocol. Is one better off to use only cold water or to cycle between hot and cold water? Or is this dependent on one's goals? For example, for a recovery type goal, is it advisable to use the cycling of hot and cold water as opposed to a metabolic goal in which it would be advisable to use a purely cold shower? Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you answering my question. Bye.
Now, there are a lot of different reasons to use cold therapy for very different things, and especially the difference between a contrast therapy, not necessarily just a shower, and just straight up chilling the bones.
Want to make some good jokes in a Seinfeld episode, cold thermogenesis comes in handy for that too.
I guess so.
I forget what the exact line is. Something like I was cold. I don't remember. You know the episode I'm talking about, though?
I never watched Seinfeld.
Oh, okay.
I'm one of those people, but I do know what you're referring to.
One of those cold shrinkage jokes. So
yeah.
This is something that at the Become Superhuman live event, the world's expert on using cold thermogenesis to lose fat as quickly as possible talked about. And that guy's name is Ray Cronice. I have interviewed him, and also that entire talk that he gave at Become Superhuman is available inside the Ben Greenfield Fitness phone app. So if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/app, you can actually watch the whole thing and grab the actually, I think the way that we have it set up is you can listen to the whole thing. If you want to watch the video and grab the PDF and the slides, you would need to be a on the premium version of the app. But either way, yeah. Like you can get access. Like this first hour of his talk just blew my mind because he's talking about rates of weight loss in terms of like 15 to 25 pounds in a month using contrast methods of cold thermogenesis. So specifically, what Ray Cronice uses to get the body to burn fat as fast as possible is he drinks about a gallon of cold water in the morning, sleeps without covers, does hot cold contrast showers that are not done with super duper cold water, but fairly cold water. And then he takes mile long walks in the cold, in a cold enough environment to where he's shivering. So I believe that he has a kind of a biohacked lab where he's doing those on the treadmill in a cold room, but you could also do them outdoors in the cold if that were something you had access to. Now, the hot cold contrast showers are 5-minute long showers that are 20 seconds of cold water followed by 10 seconds of hot water. 10 times
warm water.
Or warm water basically. Yeah. 10 times through. Okay, so you go cold water to warm water, 10 times through, 20 seconds of cold to 10 seconds of warm. That is the actual protocol that is most effective for metabolic goals when you're looking at fat loss. There's some amount of blood circulation, right? Like vasodilation followed by vasoconstriction in your blood vessels when you're doing a hot cold contrast shower like that, which is why you could also use it for recovery. So it's the reason that they'll have like hot tubs and cold tubs in athletic training rooms at professional training facilities, and athletes will go from the hot to the cold to the hot to the cold. You get better recovery. You actually can really help with like hangovers and detox and stuff like that too. You can actually feel like a million bucks after you do hot cold contrast. I remember my wife and I did it for about 45 minutes when we were at this special sauna in Jamaica. And this was after a night where we'd been out on the town kind of doing the Margaritaville thing. And, you know, we did that hot, cold contrast for like 45 minutes and walked out of the sauna just feeling like a million bucks. Like we hadn't touched a drop of alcohol. So there are benefits that go above and beyond simply fat loss and muscle recovery. Anyways, though, there are also other things that you can do. I'll put a link to a big article that I wrote about cold thermogenesis. It's called A Cold Thermogenesis How-To, and it talks about how you can do something like when you're sitting at your desk, use one of these vests that you can get from coolfatburner.com. And these vests from coolfatburner.com wrap around your collarbone and your back and the areas where you tend to have a lot of brown adipose tissue, and they cause that brown adipose tissue to burn calories to create heat to keep your body warm. You can also get compression tights, like the 110% compression tights, and put ice sleeves into those if you want to do a similar thing for your lower body, with the added advantage that when you combine compression with ice, you actually enhance recovery and you stop a lot of potential what's called a backflow of some of your lymph fluid when you are icing and you're not compressing at the same time. So a lot of kind of ways that you can use cool temperature. But to answer Jenna's question about like which one's better for recovery and which one's better for fat loss, the contrast showers are better for fat loss. And they're more comfortable and they're more doable too, like one in the morning and one in the evening. The cold water immersion, I've personally found to work better for recovery in terms of lowering inflammation and lowering post-workout soreness. And also something that I'll use a lot of times during or before a workout to pre-cool the body, especially before a hot workout. So the issue is that is a total N equals one statement, because the evidence goes back and forth about whether or not cold water immersion really truly does work to enhance soreness, or if it's kind of all up in your head.
Reduce soreness. enhance.
To reduce soreness or to enhance recovery. So you kind of have to go out and try it. And I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I've personally found that cold thermogenesis in terms of cold water immersion for me, when you compare it to hot, cold contrast showers or like putting ice on an area or even using compression tights with ice in them, nothing for me beats going out shoulder deep down into the cold Spokane River behind my house and just like standing there for 15 or 20 minutes or treading some water. Nothing I have found beats that when it comes to my muscles feeling more recovered. So there's that.
Hi, Ben. A big fan of your shows. 44 years old, worked out my whole life. The last 10 years, it seems like I react differently to humidity. When it's really hot and humid, I sweat a lot, whether I'm working out or not. It's obviously very embarrassing social situations. I just feel like it looks like I've come out of the pool. And wonder if you can kind of help me out, give me ideas on any way to tolerate the heat better other than shutting the air conditioning off when I'm inside. It's just embarrassing. It's inconvenient. And, I think half the time I tell people I just finished the workout like 15, 20 minutes before. So if they ask, or I'll get a lot of comments like, oh, it's really hot out, you know. So any way I can deal with that better, let me know. Maybe take out those sweat glands, help.
Now, this is, again, every time somebody brings up the excessive sweating, I'm always all ears because I am a very heavy sweater, and I like the way Mike is thinking here. Some way to shut it down by always being hot, would that help? Which
always
is going completely against what Jenna asked. But Mike said that he shut off his air conditioning.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, maybe just getting more conditioned to the heat.
Heat acclimation actually causes you to sweat more. It makes you more efficient at sweating, unfortunately.
That's right. It increases the blood volume and stuff, doesn't it? So you can sweat more efficiently.
It's actually a biohack that I use before, for example, for the next month before Ironman Hawaii, I will be using this product called Sweet Sweat that I could put on my skin, and it increases the temperature of your skin. It's got cayenne pepper and a bunch of essential oils in it. And then you go sit in a sauna after you put this.
So it's a marinade.
It's a marinade, a juicy, juicy marinade. You put it on your skin, you go sit in a sauna, and it jacks up your body temperature or your skin temperature specifically, even higher than you'd get if you weren't wearing it. And so you pour buckets of sweat, and it really amps up your body temp. But what you find is that you start to pit out and sweat more because your body just gets so efficient at cooling itself that the sweat flows even more. So in Mike's case, if he's a heavy sweater already, heat acclimation protocols would probably not be such a hot idea, pun intended, for him. Hyperhidrosis is something we've talked about on the podcast before, though. And hyperhidrosis is a condition characterized by abnormally increased sweating or perspiration if you're a lady, since ladies don't sweat, as we all know. They simply perspire. They glow. So hyperhidrosis, it could be something that's caused by genetics. So it could be congenital, it could be acquired, and I'll explain in a second what I mean by acquired. But either way, you sweat more, and there is part of it is increased nervous system activity, like sympathetic fight or flight nervous system activity. Part of it is greater density of sweat glands. Some of it can be exacerbated by nervousness or excitement. And I really tried not to butcher saying the word exacerbate right there, because I almost turned it into a different word. and foods and drinks and caffeine and smoking and even different kinds of smells can trigger this hyperhidrotic response of excessive sweating. In many, many, many people, what I have found to be the issue when it's something that kind of pops up at some point in your life and you really weren't a heavy sweater before, typically it's because you have gone through a period of stress in your life that has created a little bit of an autoimmune situation, meaning that For example, someone who I know very closely went through a personal relationship issue, kind of a divorce type of scenario, and within several weeks, they were allergic or intolerant to a variety of foods that they would normally have been able to consume just fine in the past. And for this person, it manifested in hives, rashes, sweating, some gut issues, you know, bloating, constipation, things of that nature. But this is a situation that can be brought about by stress, increased sympathetic nervous system or fight or flight activity from that stress, and then increased gut permeability and kind of an imbalance in the neurotransmitters produced by the gut. And some of the issues we talked all about in episode 154, when we talked about just like how gut issues can be the precursor to a lot of other issues. So yeah. Autoimmune protocol, and I'll put a link to the autoimmune protocol, the autoimmune ebook that I'm a fan of. It's a 4 to 8 week autoimmune protocol that you could use to see if your high amount of sweating is indeed due to an autoimmune reaction. And it just cuts out common autoimmune triggers like soy and wheat and dairy, but actually provides you with some meals that allow you to do something other than just like, I don't know, sip a...
chew on cardboard.
Yeah, chew on cardboard or just eat ices from 7-Eleven or whatever. So so you've got that. That autoimmune protocol is something that you can definitely try. But there are some other natural kind of home remedies for excessive sweating that you can also try. So some of the things that are effective natural remedies for hyperhidrosis include, number one, using apple cider vinegar and actually consuming it about 3 times a day on an empty stomach. Apple cider vinegar. You can also soak some cotton balls in apple cider vinegar and you can rub it into your underarms to get rid of some of the odor that's produced from excessive sweat. Coconut oil, incidentally, also works very well for that. But as far as actually...
That doesn't sound like it would smell better, though. Putting apple cider vinegar in your armpits, like that's not going to smell good.
Well, it has an antibacterial action. Remember that sweat doesn't stink. It's the bacteria that are in your armpits metabolizing sweat. So
I'm just saying that the vinegar itself smells... Like even when you clean your kitchen with vinegar, it smells like vinegar for a few hours. So you wipe that on your armpits and sure, you're not getting BO, but you've got... VO.
Similar to cleaning a house, though, you could wipe it on your armpits and then just do like a soap and water cleanse afterwards if you wanted to get rid of the vinegar smell. So you could do that.
Good point.
Coconut oil would also work. Another thing that may help in a similar manner, and this would just be basically a way to kind of shut down a little bit of sympathetic nervous system activity in a similar way that eating vinegar on an empty stomach would be to have a glass of tomato juice. And you can just do a fresh glass of tomato juice, preferably not the V8 stuff, but just like regular old tomato juice several times a day. And that's another thing that has traditionally been used as a home remedy for excessive sweating. So that's another thing. There are a couple of herbs. One is witch hazel. The other is sage. And both witch hazel and sage tea can help to get rid of excessive sweating. They help to reduce the sweat gland activity. They'll activate the parasympathetic nervous system a little bit to reduce underarm sweating. So that's something else that you could try is an herbal tea made with like sage or witch hazel. Those would be kind of two traditional herbs. As far as some other things that you could try that go above and beyond just like an autoimmune protocol, sometimes iodine-rich foods can aggravate sweating, and that would be specifically some of your cruciferous kind of stinky foods like broccoli or asparagus or onions. Those would be some things that you could be careful with, and some of those can kind of cause sweating and also cause sweat to stink a little bit more. The other things that can cause that would be foods that are rich in nitrates or foods that are also rich in purine-based proteins. So having a lot of like beef and liver and dark poultry meat and stuff like that can also aggravate the issue. And I know that this stuff is just kind of like, you know, it might be tricky for some people to eliminate, but if you're trying to get rid of sweating and you just wanted to try out a few things, these are the things that are traditionally used as like natural remedies if you didn't want to go in for surgery to have your sweat glands cut out. So last thing is wheatgrass, and wheatgrass juice can actually be an effective home remedy for excessive sweating. We actually grow wheatgrass on our counter. And
I thought that was something new and fancy I hadn't heard of before.
Wheat jazz juice. Anyways, wheatgrass juice. We grow wheatgrass and just drop it into smoothies. You can just cut it with scissors after it's grown on your counter and toss it into a smoothie. Or just, you know, I guess you could eat it if you wanted to. You could blend it to make wheatgrass. But having a glass of wheatgrass a day, similar to like having a glass of tomato juice a day, or drinking some of this herbal tea, or using the apple cider vinegar, all of those are things that you can definitely try for excessive sweating if you don't just want to go in and get the sweat glands snipped, so to speak. So,
is that really a thing?
That really is a thing. Sweat gland removal or destruction is a surgical option.
I've heard of getting the Botox
for hyperhidrosis.
Injection,
but... Yeah, Botox is another one, but it's very similar to like liposuction with a laser. It's called laser sweat ablation. And you can also use a similar technique that you would use for liposuction or sucking fat out, and it's called sweat gland suction. So,
I just worry that keeping all that sweat inside, you'd just explode at some point.
At some point, your head is just going to like swell up and you explode in one nasty, stinky pile of sweat.
Exactly.
I'm sure that they have looked into that and... They did a little bit of research before the surgical procedure was approved by the FDA or whatnot. So there you go.
I'd be the first.
How many times do you poop in a day?
Well, that was short and to the point, I guess.
It's right to the point. I like it.
Speaking of stuff building up inside of you and exploding.
No.
So how many times should you poop in a day? Well, I can go right out there and tell you how many times I poop in a day, and it's once. So I have one big bowel movement in the morning where I'm typically, I sit on my squatty potty and I sip my cup of coffee, and usually I read my Kindle for a few minutes and do my big bowel movement for the day, and that's it. And I really don't go back to the toilets other than to pee after that. So I'm a one-a-dayer, and I used to be more of like a two or three a dayer until I decided that I wanted to be a one a dayer. And so I just kind of stay in there in the bathroom until I kind of eliminate everything in the morning. And then I just don't go back in the rest of the day. I've kind of trained my body to just go once in the morning, and that works out pretty well for me. How about you, Brock?
I'm extremely similar. I did the same thing a few years ago. Actually, when I started racing, it was when I started doing marathons that I just decided, okay, well, I've got my protocol down. I have my big glass of water. I get my cup of coffee. I have a couple sips of that, and bada bing, bada bang, it's all done.
Your parasympathetic nervous system is pretty active in the morning, and it's a really conducive time to just get everything out if you're able to, if you have the luxury of, you know, not waking up and being in a stressed, hectic rush to get to work and, you know, skip a morning trip to the bathroom and that kind of thing. If you can make some time in the morning, you can actually train your body to get into this kind of one-a-day scenario. And if you need some help getting that along, you should listen to my podcast episode I did with a guy named Troy Casey.
With the poop expert.
The poop expert, who's also a male model. He's a male model and a poop expert. So... There are two unique populations that we've discussed, the soccer playing wood choppers and the male model poop experts in today's episode. I will link to that one in the show notes, but Troy has his better pooping regimen, which is a combination of something called Dr. Schultz's intestinal formula, clay, literally the edible earth clay, and then a high fiber herbal colon cleanse. And I think Troy and I talk about this in the episode, but I talked to Troy a little bit about how I feel like the high fiber cleanses cause more potential damage to the small intestine and long term buildup in the gut rather than really helping you to poop long term. And actually, there was an article that came out today. Brock and I were talking about it before the show about how too much fiber may also be bad for your sexual performance. So I'm not a huge fan of high fiber supplements. I personally recommend if you want to kind of get your body into a state where it initiates that bowel movement a little bit more easily in the morning. Two things that I like. One is called MAG-07, and that is like an oxygenated magnesium. Mm-hmm. And compared to all of the other forms of magnesium out there, this is the stuff that I think has the most potent stool softening effect. So that would be one. And then the other one is called the colorectal recovery program. And if you have a lot of issues with your colon and your pooping mechanics and all that jazz, it may be due to some kind of a bacterial imbalance in your large intestine, or something that needs to be addressed from like a fatty acid or a mineral standpoint in your colon. And the colorectal recovery program is something that I successfully used when I got pretty severely constipated after a bout of antibiotics, and this kind of rescued me. So I talk about all of those and link to all of those, both Troy's better pooping regimen and also Ben's better pooping regimen in the How to Poop episode. So I will link to the How to Poop episode in my response to her. But yeah, I'm a one-a-dayer, and it's just a combination of the squatty potty and just kind of waking up in the morning. And I don't even use anymore. I don't use a stool softener or anything like that in the evening. I just kind of get up and go. But initially, when I was poop training myself, so to speak, I started off by using some of those evening stool softeners. And occasionally, if I've had something that I know constipates me, such as too much alcohol, I'll still do that.
I remember the guys who invented the specific carbohydrate diet, the SCD, when they were on the show, they were talking about how, especially the one fellow, I can't remember his name, he was having basically what we refer to as poo emergencies quite often during the day. And he cured that basically while he was inventing the specific carbohydrate diet. So Isn't it often like people who do have to go more than once a day, it's likely because there's something going on that isn't quite right, and they need to sort of figure that out a little bit?
Yeah, it can be infections, irritable bowel syndrome. It can be like an allergic reaction, like an autoimmune issue. Anytime you're going more than three times a day, that would be a case where you should definitely look into using something like the specific carbohydrate diet, eliminating what are called FODMAPs, which you could go do a search for at BenGreenfieldFitness.com, because I've talked about them before. They're just fermentable foods that can cause issues with going to the bathroom too much or becoming constipated. And going less than once a day or going like three plus times a day are both issues that you may need to address some kind of a bacterial imbalance or kind of dig a little deeper when it comes to figuring out what's going on. Interestingly, the other thing that you need to pay attention to is color. And there's something called a Bristol stool scale, which shows you the proper texture that poop is supposed to be. But there are also charts out there that show you different colors of what an ideal stool should be. And you'll notice a lot of times in athletes that the color of poo is more brown, sometimes a little bit, even borderline black. And that's because of bilirubin, which is this pigment that's generated when you break down red blood cells. A lot of times, once you start exercising or during a period of time when you're exercising heavily, your poop gets darker. And that's something I've noticed because my kids forget to flush a lot, is that their poop is like really light colored compared to mine, which is very dark. And it's because of my levels of exercise and that bilirubin formed by the breakdown of red blood cells. So all sorts of interesting things that you can delve into, and we could probably talk about poop for a really long time. But ultimately, one a day is, in my opinion, a really convenient way to train your body to go. And then if you're not even going once a day, or you're going more than three times a day, something is probably up, and I'd get that checked out.
And as Dr. Kellogg used to say, never resist the urge to defecate.
Never resist the urge. That's actually really good advice. You should, if you need to poo, go poo. Because when you resist the urge, it actually can damage the nerves that are up inside of you. And it can also cause some impact and some issues with straining, hemorrhoids, stuff like that. So when the urge to poo happens, go poo. So that being said, I'll be right back. No, I'm just kidding.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Brock. This is Kelsey calling. Since I have been listening to your podcast and reading some of the great articles that you've written and doing the superhuman coaching thing, I've gotten kind of into checking the ingredients on everything, especially like cosmetics and skincare products. So anyways, there's a company that I've been buying skincare products from for years. It's called Hydron. And so I was reading the ingredients list, and they were using BHA as a preservative in one of their products that I really like. So I sent them an email, with my concerns. They sent me an email back saying, well, you know, we really need our products to be shelf stable, and vitamin E and rosemary oil would probably cut down the time that these products would stay fresh. So I sent her another email with a link to a couple of articles. One was about a new preservative called Rosamox, made from rosemary, that is good for skincare products. And anyways, to make a long story short, she sent me an email back and she said, thank you for the great articles. I'm forwarding these articles on to our chemist. And she said, because of your email, we are going to start testing this Rosamox in our products. You know, maybe we'll see if we can't switch over and get rid of the BHA in our products. So that was just really cool to get that email to actually make a difference to a company, and that a company would actually listen to me. It was pretty cool. Anyways, thanks for everything you do.
So that's a really great story. Mm. And you know, there isn't really a question in what Kelsey said, but I decided that we should put it in the show anyway, because I sort of have the question now after hearing her story of successfully getting this company to actually look into BHA. Switching to something else. Is that actually better? Is Rosamox going to be better than the BHA?
Sure. They're just both antioxidants. So BHA is something that gets added to a lot of foods and supplements and skincare products because it's a fat preservative. So we all know that, like fish oil, if you get fish oil and it's not packaged with an antioxidant and it's not cold processed and it's not in its triglyceride-based form, it's doing more harm to your body than good to consume that fish oil. But if the antioxidant that they add to that fish oil is, say, a BHA derivative antioxidant, then that also turns that fish oil into something that is potentially carcinogenic and something that has more oxidative stress-producing properties potentially, because that is a synthetic chemical, that BHA. So what you're seeing the better companies doing now are choosing natural antioxidants that preserve fats in both supplements and nutraceuticals and skin products, using natural antioxidants that are extracted using a different form of chemistry. Specifically, in the case of this Rosamax stuff, it's extracted using supercritical carbon dioxide, and that's totally solvent-free, it's green, it's sustainable, and it results in an end product, in an antioxidant that actually doesn't have those same type of carcinogenic properties and chemical properties as traditional BHA. So that's fantastic that a company would choose to use something like Rosamax instead of BHA. And this is something that I've kind of had my head into recently anyways, because as I think I've mentioned on this show before, I am in the process of developing a supplement line that's specifically designed for kind of like hard charging people who want to get the most out of their bodies and out of their minds. And I've had to look a ton into the actual ingredients that are used and, you know, how we can generate a formulation that allows you to have just one pill bottle in your fridge and kind of get everything done in one fell swoop. And so I'm subscribing right now to all these, you know, these Natural Supplement Insider magazines, and it's mind blowing and mind boggling how many different labs and ingredient source materials are out there that you could use. And I'm sure that there are many, many companies out there making these decisions based solely on price and not on long-term effects. So, you certainly got to be careful. My wife actually has done some webinars inside the Ben Greenfield Fitness Inner Circle, where she not only talks about how to make your own sunscreen and your own natural skin protectants, but she talks about how to protect your skin by avoiding chemicals, how to choose the right product. She's got a bunch of videos in there of like the lotion that she uses and everything. I talked to her last night, though, and I actually asked her, you know, if I wanted to tell the listeners to the podcast tomorrow some of the little things that you do, can you tell me? And so some of the things that she does is she dry brushes her whole body every day. And we don't have a lot of time today to get into what dry brushing is, but essentially it's kind of the removal of a lot of dead skin cells. And you could go Google dry brushing and you'd
find out. It kind of is exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, it is. So
there's not a lot of mystery there.
Yeah. So she dry brushes every day. She uses a mineral based makeup made by a company called Ferro. That's Ferro. She washes her face with a very hypoallergenic soap, and it's a goat milk soap. And I believe she gets that goat milk soap from the local health food store. And then she also uses coconut oil, a coconut oil rinse, as an oil cleansing method to cleanse like bacteria and stuff off of her skin. Once a week, she scrubs her skin with baking soda for about 5 to 10 minutes. And she doesn't do that any more often than once a week because it can really be very drying to the skin to use baking soda too often. And she used to really have to deal quite significantly with acne. And actually, that's one of the things that initially kind of tuned us into some of this, you know, kind of Weston A. Price ancestral paleo primal eating, was kind of figuring out how to get rid of some of her acne about 6 or 7 years ago or so. And we bought one of Lauren Cordain's books called something like The Dietary Cure for Acne. And she picked up a lot of kind of natural dietary tips from that. But she has great skin now. If she does get a breakout, yeah, she does a honey mask. She makes a honey mask, and that's another thing that you could look into using. Again, something we won't get into on this show. She does talk about her recipes, though, inside the Ben Greenfield Fitness Inner Circle. And when she gets kind of like a freak pimple, she dabs just like a baking soda-based toothpaste on it overnight to draw out the infection. And then she makes most of her own stuff aside from the mineral-based makeup and puts all those recipes into the Inner Circle. So we've got a lot of listeners. I know, I think we have about 800 listeners who are Inner Circle members. So for those of you who are Inner Circle members, I'll just kind of put the link to the two webinars. If you don't want to go search for them in the Inner Circle, I'll link to them straight from the show notes for this episode, episode number 255. And if you're not an Inner Circle member, it's $10 a month. So it's pretty cool. We actually just did a webinar two nights ago called Dieting Sucks, where we talked about why dieting sucks, why we don't diet, and how you too can not diet. So there's that shameless commercial for the Inner Circle. And that's what I've got for you.
That's interesting, though, that Jessa had skin problems before, because having just spent like 4 days straight with you guys, she has really great skin now.
Yeah.
I saw her first thing in the morning and she looked great.
And let me say this too. I don't want to toot my own horn too much, but I personally get a lot of compliments about my skin, about the color of my skin, the texture of my skin. And when I don't have my squirrel flowing beard, essentially the youthfulness of my skin. And what I use on a daily basis is I use olive oil as my moisturizer, just a regular extra virgin olive oil, which is chock full of helpful skin protectants and polyphenols. I take about 6 milligrams of astaxanthin per day, and that's a natural skin protectant. I don't even use sunscreen. I didn't put a single drop of sunscreen on during something like Ironman Canada. And I just used Super Essentials fish oil, which has astaxanthin packaged along with it. Another really good source of astaxanthin is from the Big Island down in Kona. I forget the brand, but it's called like Kona or Big Island astaxanthin or Hawaii astaxanthin or something like that. And then the only other things I do is I use all natural personal care products. So I use a hair pomade that's made out of coconut oil and hemp oil. I only use Dr. Bronner's liquid soap, which is, again, hemp oil and I think olive oil and a few other natural antibacterials. I use Dr. Brunner's shaving cream for my shaving cream, and that's, again, just made from natural oils. You could literally eat the stuff, and you'd be just fine. Doesn't hurt you. And then I use a little bit of coconut oil occasionally in my armpits as a deodorant, and that is about the extent of my own personal care product line. And so, essentially, my rule for what I use on my face is if I could eat it without dying or if I could eat it without getting sick or getting a tummy ache, then it's probably okay to put on my face or on my skin. So that's the rule that I follow. Just recently put out a video over at youtube.com/Ben Greenfield Fitness about that too. So that's how Jessa and I go about our own care for our skin. And hopefully that gives you listeners some ideas as well.
Yeah, pretty much the first thing that people ask me when they find out that I work with you is, first they ask, how old is Ben?
Mm.
And then the second thing they ask is, how much money does he make? So, of course, really? I answer, well, he's 67 years old, and I think he makes about $100.
Hey, guys, I'm Bob from Wildwood, New Jersey. I'm a longtime listener and show supporter. My question today regards bone spurs. I have a serious bone spur near my big toe, and it just keeps getting worse with every run. I'm hoping to learn of some magic Ben treatment or recommendation to fix it. Obviously, I know surgery is inevitable, but I had to reach out. I'm curious on what causes bone spurs, and is there any non-surgical fixes that you could recommend? Thanks, and keep up the great work. I look forward to hearing from you.
You know, Bob needs to just go over to the website and do a search for bone healing or what else could he look for? We've talked a lot about how to heal broken bones or fractures and stuff like that. And I'm assuming it's going to be a similar type of answer here.
Well, specifically with bone spurs, though, the problem with bone spurs is, that's an actual physical spur. I mean, a lot of times we've talked about stress fractures and how you can use, like, lactoferrin and electromagnetic stimulation and, glucosamine chondroitin from something like Capreflex and, like, ways you could heal stress fractures or even broken bones more quickly. But a spur is actually a literal growth. I mean, it's an osteophyte. It's a bony growth that typically forms on the back of your heel or on the front of your toes in response to stress in that area. And it's, it's kind of a different situation, right? Because it's not something that needs to be melded or welded or fixed. It's something that almost needs to be kind of like broken down or removed. So,
interesting. Yeah. I always thought the bone spur was actually part of the bone had sort of broken, not completely off, but it just sort of separated and was sort of sticking out like a spur. But it's actually a growth, eh?
It's an actual growth. So if you look at, like, everybody's got the little bump on the front of their knees. And I thought this was really interesting in anatomy back in university when we look at the bones in specific places where tendons that you use a lot attach to bones or where ligaments attach to bones and pull on those bones, you have bumps. That's why you have that bump on the front of your knee. It's because of where the patellar tendon attaches. And in areas where bone is stressed, it responds by growing. And in some places where there's repetitive injury or repetitive stress, such as, in runners who are putting repetitive stress on their heel or repetitive stress on their toes, you actually, you can observe these osteophytes forming and pain develops eventually from these spurs. So if you just wanted to control the pain, you just use a natural pain-killing anti-inflammatory. And a lot of people, that's enough. Like, you can use something like a high-dose curcumin extract. Like, I use phenocaine. So phenocaine is a turmeric, it's natokinase, it's phenylalanine. It's a bunch of stuff that works, in my opinion, just as well as ibuprofen or Advil with zero side effects. Now, phenocaine is something I'll use for hangovers. It's something I'll use for muscle pain. I used about 8 a day for a week after Ironman to reduce my risk of blood clotting.
I took a bunch of them before I went to the dentist once because I knew it was going to be a painful procedure.
Yeah. So curcumin is a pretty potent brain anti-inflammatory as well. So anytime you have brain fog, interestingly, it can kind of help to clear that up too. But that's what I would use for the painkilling part of this. If I personally ever get a bone spur, though, I can tell you the very first thing that I would personally do before I even consider going in for surgery to have it surgically removed, which is an option. It's a viable option. You can have it removed, and that's not a dangerous surgery. I would consider using pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. So you've perhaps heard me talk about that Earth Pulse device that I place underneath my mattress. It's like grounding or like earthing on steroids, meaning that it amplifies the natural frequency emitted by the planet Earth while you're sleeping, and you basically soak up all those beneficial frequencies into your body. Very, very low frequencies, very different from like a cell phone or a microwave or something like that as you're sleeping. Now,
and
if
it'll shrink your testicles down to the size of
No, it won't. And if it does, you can
so
just...
it's not like steroids that
if
way.
If it does, you can just go out and chop some wood. Anyways, though, you can also take... it's a magnet, so you can take the north end pole of a pulsed electromagnetic frequency device like the Earth Pulse, and you can place it against an injured area, and it can enhance blood flow to that area. Now, in the case of a bone spur... There's a really interesting study online that shows some of the PEMF results on breaking down areas of excessive osteophyte formation. But there's a really interesting x-ray where within 6 months of this PEMF treatment, there's near elimination of a bone spur that's almost penetrating the spinal cord in somebody's back. So it's essentially a frequency that kind of breaks down a little bit of that bone. So what you'd do is you'd hold it against the area where the spur is for about 15 to 20 minutes a day. North end pole would go up against the bone. Don't worry, it doesn't like break down bone in that when you hold it against your bone, you're going to like make a bunch of weak bones in your foot. It doesn't work that way. It's just essentially working on that area of excessive osteophyte formation. It's a frequency that's emitted by the PEMF device. Fortunately, it also has a little bit of a pain-killing effect. So that's what I would use, at least for a little while. You know, I would use it for a good couple of months. And then if nothing's happening, then go in and schedule your surgery and just get the bone spur removed and, you know, go do a search on BenGreenfieldFitness.com for surgery so you know about all the ways to bounce back faster, like using proteolytic enzymes and all that jazz. But that's what I would do is I would use phenocaine, I would use pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, and if you are a runner or a jumper or somebody who's concerned about a potential for a heel spur or a toe spur formation, the best recommendation that I could give to you would be to A, strength train so that you are training your body to not have to put excessive stress on a joint, but instead training your body how to weight bear a little bit more evenly. And then B, make sure that you're using footwear that's really designed very, very properly for your specific foot. And this is actually a blog post that I'm working on because I just personally had some custom fitted cycling shoes designed, and they're really cool. And I'm working on a blog post about they're kind of like the closest thing that you can get to barefoot running for cyclists. They're made by a company called Rocket 7. So I'm gonna be writing an article on footwear.
Doesn't sound like a good idea.
What's that?
That it just seems sort of counterintuitive to want to be. Why would you want to be barefoot on your bike?
Well, no, they've got like a carbon footplate and everything. Like the power transfer is fine. I mean, they were developed by a professional cyclist, but they're literally molded to your foot. Like you do a casting of your foot, you send it into this company, you put on the shoe, and you can't tell you're wearing a shoe when you're riding your bike. Mm. But you still get all the power transfer and everything. So it's not like using those cheesy barefoot plates. I actually raced the Wildflower Triathlon in those once. I forget what they call, but they're not cycling pedals. They're actual platforms. Like I think they're called pyro platforms. And you
that snap into where your clips would go.
Not a good idea. They are my transition during the triathlon was like 5 minutes long, and my feet were killing me for like a week. So yeah, true traditional barefoot cycling I don't recommend, but using custom fitted cycling shoes, holy cow, if you plan on being a cyclist long term, Awesome stuff. So that those are made by Rocket 7.
Awesome. Well, maybe you can get some branded with the BG Fitness logo.
That's right. I've got my name on mine. They say B Greenfield because I don't think Ben Greenfield would fit along the entire. I'm just glad they didn't write Ben Green.
Yeah. So I was just actually joking about that because I wanted to find a way to segue into asking you if you have your Ben Greenfield Fitness swag all lined up to give away to our awesome iTunes reviews.
You and your tricky segues. No, no, I don't. But I'm still sending out cool care packages for the reviews. I should have that swag in by about mid-September or so. I'll have hats, and I'll have water bottles, and I'll have shirts, like not crappy cotton shirts that look like tents, but actually like nice-fitting tech t-shirts for all of our muscly, ripped listeners.
All the people who do silly bench press.
That's right, all you silly bench pressers. So if you want to leave a review in iTunes, what we do is if we read your review on the show, then you can let us know that you heard your review being read, and you give us your address, and we send you a care package. Mm-hmm. So it might be a can of Campbell's soup, or maybe some crackers, some
of those Oreo cookies with the double stuffing.
That's
that everybody
right.
was all upset
that's
about
right.
lately.
That's right. Or perhaps if you get me this week a survival kit, maybe I'll send you some beef jerky and some.
Ooh, like, maybe one of your homegrown squirrels.
Astronaut capsules that you add water to get a turkey dinner. anyways, though, today's review is left on iTunes by Tri Buddha, who only gave our podcast 4 stars, not 5 stars. I have no clue why. But anyways, I'm going to read it anyways.
Tri Buddha, not cool.
Not
Tri Buddha,
cool.
Not cool.
But he says, a great kick in the pants. So Tri Buddha says,
I'll give him a kick in the pants. 4 stars worth.
Ben and Brock do a fantastic job each week bringing you everything you need to know about health, fitness, nutrition, and holistic living. His tips and tricks on how to hack healthy living motivate and inform me on how to live a better life. It is one of the few podcasts that actually bases all their recommendations on actual science and not tin hat conspiracy theories. Even the poop discussions have a, ready for this? Nugget of truth to them. Tri Buddha, you are such a kick in the pants. And because you only left 4 stars, I think I may actually just send you a nugget, if you catch my meaning. Mm-hmm. Anyways, a dark bilirubin colored nugget.
Nice.
So there you have it. So anyways, yeah, so if you want to leave your review, go over to iTunes. And of course, if you want a special website that allows you to give the gift of Ben Greenfield Fitness to your friends, your family, your loved ones, or your extremely annoyed coworkers, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/love. And at bengreenfieldfitness.com/love, you can share the wealth. And at bengreenfieldfitness.com/255, you can get the show notes for this episode.
All and, the shiznit.
If you're lucky, I might actually show up next week or in a couple of weeks.
No, the week after. Yeah.
If not, goodbye, everyone. It was nice knowing you.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice. We'll be right back.